Time to welcome in Curtis Greco from the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. Lots to talk about, and I guess we should start with the tenuous ceasefire, I guess you could say, in Gaza between Hamas and Israel. It's holding for now, Curtis, but the real sticky wicket here is this disarming of Hamas. Somebody's going to have to go in there and do it, because I don't think they're just going to voluntarily lay down arms, are they?
No, absolutely not. And this is one of the, I think, the hidden secrets, or I should say the hidden bonus with how Trump approached this solution, and that's by enlisting the alliances of Turkey, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, etc. These countries can't be seen as having thrown in with Trump and failed in the process of it. I think that leverage that Trump is counting on is going to be the key. It's going to be a rough and tumble for quite some time, true, because this has been going on so long, and so the pent-up anger. But as time goes by and they filter out, they clean out more and more of this rabble, so to speak, I think that it's going to stabilize more, and again, as they start using cleanup measures to actually start rehabilitating the area, I think more and more control is going to be established by the imposing force that's going to be there for the security force. The U.S. presence is, though Trump says there's not going to be a formal U.S. presence as part of the security force, the fact of the matter is that the U.S. has massive resources already stabled in and around Gaza, that it's going to be almost unavoidable for the U.S. presence to not be felt.
Yeah, I think maybe the part of this deal, this ceasefire and plan to move forward, that the regular citizen hasn't really realized, Curtis, is that the president, and with, of course, the great work done by Israel to dismantle a lot of these forces, not just Hamas, but Hezbollah and the Houthis, basically, right, the people around Gaza and other nations are the ones that are really applying the pressure for Hamas to agree to the ceasefire and turn over the hostages in the first place. He's sort of cobbled together everybody around the Palestinians.
Yeah, that's really the brilliance of how Trump approached this. He's got a great talent pool around him, Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff, and there's a lot of people in the perimeter of that crew who have been extraordinarily valuable in crafting a strategy to make this work. And I believe it's as you used the word cobbling, it's exactly what it was, of getting these people. And Trump is incredibly effective in using his personal relationships with these different, thinking about Turkey, Erdogan. The fact that Erdogan sat in the same room with some of those others and met privately with Netanyahu is a testament to Trump's ability to bridge gaps. And I think in time this is going to show, like I said, there will be problems. There are going to be stupid people doing stupid things that are going to create injuries and fake fatalities. But I believe that in the long run, the treasure of this is the group that is there that can't be seen to lose face in the measures that are going to be required that will prevent failure from overwhelming the potential of success.
Well, Curtis, unfortunately, not much progress to be reported with the Russia-Ukraine war. President Trump appears to be more and more frustrated with Vladimir Putin, but as of yet, nobody's been able to turn up the pressure enough on Putin to make him either retreat or agree to a ceasefire or even seriously talk. What can be done to bring Putin to the table in a serious way?
Well, as we've talked about this before, and I've written extensively on it, the problem with Putin and to some extent Lavrov, who's a great brain trust for Putin, is the fact that there really is no military or economic threat they believe that they can outlast, right, on one hand. Number two, they don't see, although they see Trump as a threat because of his posture, they really don't think that Donald Trump will release any real major military effect against them. And they cite, for example, that whether or not Trump is actually willing to endure the blowback domestically if the U.S. starts getting itself entangled in a sort of satellite battle with Russia. And so it goes back to the only really way, and I guess in some parts, let me interject one other quick thought, China. I mean, there's really nothing that the U.S. can really do in leveraging its influences, whatever there might be of them, of getting China to somehow come to the aid of forcing Russia to the table. In the end, the only way this is going to come to some positive resolution is Putin has to be put in a position where the economic loss is felt by his pals, his oligarch cabal, the people that stand with Putin and keep Putin in office. That's the big misunderstanding about Russia and the politics of Russia, is that somehow Putin is carrying some great Kalashnikov that he's got at the heads of all of the population of Russia and all the oligarchs. That is not the case. Mr. Putin has a very tenuous relationship with wealthy components of the Russian state elite that keep him, allow him to stay in power. The U.S. has got to come up with a way, and to some extent with the aid of Europe, though I must confess I don't trust the EU at all. I trust the British even less. But that is going to be the most effective way, because what's going to happen if it goes on too long and the Russians feel that it only becomes a war of attrition, Russia will feel as it does and has always felt this way. If you want to look at the World War II or go back to Napoleon's attempt, Russia has no problem throwing bodies into the cavern and allowing them to waste away in bad weather. That's a very important thing to take into account when you start wondering, how do we affect this? What do we do? Can we force them to the bargaining table? How do we force them to the bargaining table? There's only one way you do it, and it has to be through a threat that is personal, not national. It has to be done that way, because other than that, Putin doesn't have any risk.
Interesting thoughts from Curtis Greco with the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. Curtis, another international entanglement, of course, the so-called trade war with China. That seems to have hit a bit of an impasse. What is your read on where that stands?
The only way, first of all, I think from a trade vantage point, I think there's got to be more done in understanding Trump's effectiveness in using tariffs. Most people have been taught to believe that somehow this is a tax on the public. That is not what it is. If you think of a company, and this is going to be a little long-winded, so I'm going to cut it down as nice and tidy as I can. The reason why people buy a McDonald's franchise and pay a franchise fee to run a McDonald's is because there's a proven track record. There's a proven value and already dealing into a marketplace that is quantifiable. You know from one McDonald's to the next what you expect, and a buyer or a participant who wants to run a McDonald's is willing to pay for it. The American, the United States has long been misunderstood or abused, as Trump would say, and taken advantage of. And I believe the reason that is mostly misunderstood when Trump says this is because the marketplace that makes the United States or a company successful in the United States is not about the U.S. tax code. It's not about whether or not you have great marketing. It's what it is because you have a ready, willing, and able, and a well-funded marketplace. And when companies come here and do business in this country, they need to pay for the privilege of having access to that marketplace. Think on that. Understand that there is a price, should be a price to be paid for access to that marketplace. What does this do with China? The problem with China is that China exists in an economic power position because the U.S. allowed it. By allowing the inclusion of China into the IMF, by giving it standing and a ability to basically create its own currency, to self-fund itself, no different than what the United States does through the Federal Reserve, but basically the U.S. created its own worst enemy, an image of itself. China's ability to control pricing, China's ability to control its currency, China's ability to control its population, and force its submission into cheap labor pools has made China a very difficult competitor, primarily because it has the ability to do the complete opposite of what the United States does or has done for itself, and that is to protect its marketplace, protect its resources, protect its productive capacity, protect its currency. And what Trump is doing is attempting to reverse all of that. China, what does it matter? Well, the point is China is not the big economic powerhouse that most people think it is. It is very unstable economically. It's very unstable population-based. It's predicted within the next 25 years, China will lose 40% of its productive portion of its population simply because it's going to age out. How do you know this to be true? China suddenly all of a sudden started paying women in China to start having babies. So when you ask the question, or when the question is asked about what do we do with China, the real question should be is what do we need to do to take the market away from China that has for the last 35 years been enjoying? And part of that is, a great portion of that is to restore the control of the marketplace China has access to.
That's Curtis Greco with the Imperfect Messenger Foundation, as always, with thoughtful analysis of several issues. Curtis, thanks for checking in with us.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.